pintor, nacido en mi tierra. Con el pincel extranjero, pintor que sigue el rumbo de tantos pintores.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and what you're hearing is Roberta Flack, and you're hearing this song she did on this album that she came out with in 1972, became a hit album. We're talking about This Day in History in 1972, March 25th. But this particular song that she did on this album, First Take, is Angelitos Negros. It was a poem written by Andres Eloy Blanco, who was a Venezuelan poet, who wrote this beautiful poem about how painters and poets cannot talk about black angels, only white people. And he wrote this poem against racism in Venezuela in the 1950s. In the 1940s, actually. And a very forward-thinking man. And when she put this album out, this album, of course, is Killing Me Softly was on this album, which is what everybody remembers. But this is one of the most incredible albums. Many of these songs here were songs that have to do with social justice, about leaving life a certain way. And there's also many beautiful love songs in this album. And First Take, she was an incredible album. It came out in 69, but it really hit in 72. 69 is when I bought the album, not long after I saw her sing when she was still just a school teacher in Washington, D.C. So that is how we begin our day in history here on this March the 25th. And I want to introduce to you all our two guests in the studio for this day in history. We have with us John Milton Wesley, who joins us often. Author, songwriter, senior fellow of social marketing with the National Center for Health Behavioral Change at Morgan State University. And Dr. Joanne Martin is with us, co-founder and president of the CEO and CEO of Baltimore's Great Blacks and Wax Museum, who we just visited not long ago in her museum for a special. Good to have you both with us.
Good to be here, Mark. Good to be with you again.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can tweet me at Mark Steiner and join in on this conversation. A lot happened on this day in history, and we're going to talk about a lot of that. This was the day the Scottsboro Boys were arrested in 1931. This was the day that Ida B. Wells was born, and we'll talk about who passed away on this day. Ida B. Wells in 1931, March the 25th, she passed away, and people hear that name. She was on a stamp. A few people know who she really was or what she really meant in her history. This was a day in 1967 that Martin Luther King led his first anti-war march through the streets of Chicago. And this is the day that we were talking to Dr. Martin about this before we came in the room, that in 1584 Sir Walter Raleigh was granted a patent to colonize Virginia. And that's directly connected to what people are celebrating today, which is Maryland Day, 1634, when the first white colonists came to the shores here. And then one of the first things that happened was one of the first Africans brought to America in Jamestown ended up the eastern shore in Maryland. All these things are deeply connected. So we will talk about these things. There's also a day in the Coxey's Army marched in Washington in 1894. The unemployed men who fought in the Civil War came there to fight for their civil rights then on this day. So a great deal happened on this day in history, and we are happy to have these folks with us here in the studio to talk a bit about that. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So good to have you both here.
Good to be here with you.
A different change in day in history. See what we do with this today. So where do we begin? I mean, I do want to get deeply into Ida B. Wells and spend a lot of time with her today and on Scottsboro. Which is a piece of history we hear that name but don't understand its depth. But for a moment, let me just start very quickly, Joanne Martin, with what you were saying to me about the significance of Sir Walter Raleigh in 1584 in Virginia. Talk a bit about that from your perspective.
Well, that mere act, and I guess it's really about what Virginia became in terms of setting the stage for what slavery would be in America. Virginia helping to codify slavery and the slave laws and the black codes and any number of things. It was in Virginia where the whole idea of where Indians would fit in the grand scheme of things, because these British people came to America. They weren't able to take care of themselves, but they came with a certain arrogance, and they needed the Indians. The Indians would not be good slaves, and determined that they would not be. So there was this acerbic relationship that they eventually developed. The whole idea of where Christianity fit. Virginia determined that people who had been Christianized, once the decision was made that the Africans would be the slaves, they had been brought in as indentured servants. But you quickly moved to a situation in which slavery was defined by race and all that that meant. And therefore, you had to have a way to balance this idea of Christianity as something that would define freedom. And so it did not define freedom for these people that you had determined were going to be slaves. So in any number of ways, what slavery became was set in Virginia in those early days.
And so let's move forward here, because I think one of the things I do want folks to join us here with us at 410-319-8888 is our thoughts on Ida B. Wells. I think this is directly connected. Here's a woman who was born 2 years before the Emancipation Proclamation. Her parents were slaves until they were, until emancipation, and he became a huge leader in the fight for human rights and civil rights in right after slavery. It was a carpenter and was a forceful leader, and she was kind of born into this world. So when we think of her in the stamp, we think of her as the head of the National Council of Negro Women, the Colored Women that she founded. But she was so much deeper than that. Talk a bit from your perspectives on the death of Ida B. Wells.
Well, you know, when I look at the fact that African-American women really began to educate their daughters at the turn of the century, okay, and the fact that Ida B. Wells was smart enough and had been educated prior to this, okay, really says something about her family. This lady went on to head her own newspaper. The fact that she would be able to take care of her siblings, you know, the fact that she was able to convince a school that she was 18 years old when she wasn't 18 and become a teacher in order to take care of her family. But the fact that I think it's so ironic, too, that she would pass away in 1931, at the time that the Scottsboro boys were really facing lynching.
Right. She passed away on the day the Scottsboro boys were arrested, which is really, exactly. Right?
I mean, yes. Really, that's really something, you know. And interestingly enough, I was at the Afro building yesterday at the archives, and I saw the letters from two of the Scottsboro boys in the files there at the Afro, that they wrote to Mr. Murphy about it. And I thought it was so fascinating. But back to Ida, just the fact that this lady had the wherewithal to do the things and to demand her independence at that time. That's extraordinary.
And one of the things, Joanne Martin, that really strikes me here to talk a bit about is that people don't realize, I think, also that the political force that she was. I mean, she almost single-handedly, and you can talk about this, made the nation and the country aware of lynching.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly. Two of her friends were lynched, and she did studies of lynching. So she wasn't talking even from her emotions.
Right.
Her emotions may have driven her direction that she took, but she was talking from actual research, debunking the idea that white women were victims of these lascivious black men, and debunking the idea that it was rape of white women that led to lynching. She said it was success, the success of black people and particularly of black men that led to lynching. The idea that she did research on about 900 cases of actual lynchings, that she had the nerve to print the names of perpetrators in her paper,
right,
of perpetrators of lynching, which got her her newspaper bombed and her having to flee. But she, as soon as she got settled again, she opened up another newspaper and began doing what she'd always always done. Many people don't know that that there is a counterpart to Rosa Parks' act on the bus that for Ida B. Wells on the train.
That's right.
She was in the first place that she bought a first class
ticket
on the train, which was an amazing act in and of itself. But she refused to give up her seat when the conductor and two other employees came to force her to give up her seat in this car.
1884,
right. And right. She refused, and I mean she was dragged off the train and thrown off the train, and had the nerve to file suit. All of those things, this lynching that she was fighting
That's
against,
right.
those were lynchable offenses.
That's
and
right.
so for her to file suit and to win in the state courts, but and then finally lose in the Mississippi Supreme Court.
Yeah.
But those were revolutionary acts, and it showed the guts of this woman and the courage of this woman and the depth of this woman.
I mean, she wrote books. I mean, she showed, a couple things really hit me about Ida B. Wells. This one throughout you all is, I mean, A, that she wrote this piece about how most of the relationships between black men and white women were consensual.
Exactly.
Really,
exactly.
She wrote these in the 1880s, right?
Exactly.
So
1880s.
So, yes.
And she also, but what she did was, while she was this incredible crusader against lynching, and exposing the world, and went to Europe and England and created these anti-lynching societies, which put pressure on the United States because nobody in America would address it. She was also on the other side. She pushed the power of where black people had come to in America in a very positive vein. Mm-hmm. So she fought against lynching and segregation, but at the same time, she also pushed the positive, so to speak. You know?
Well, sure.
That's one of the things that.
And if you think about what was going on in Baltimore at the time, you know, you think about what was going on here in terms of the history, and most of the freedmen at that time, of course, were in Maryland and in Baltimore. But you think about this lady having the nerve to do this at a time. You know, one of the reasons that so many black men were lynched at that time was because in order to be able to be on a jury, you had to be able to vote. So most of the juries were all white juries, you know. So the fact that this lady would take the stand that she took at the time that she did it, and to risk her own life without having a security detail around her, I must say.
Right.
That's pretty amazing stuff.
It really is. Also, that as we came out of slavery, that we had a zeal for voting and were making such progress that freshman class of Hiram Revels and so forth,
yeah.
who were elected because blacks went to the polls. The idea that we had a zeal for education. Most of the historically black colleges and universities that emerged after that period, shortly after slavery, up to about 1910. The fact that we were getting politicized. Ida B. Wells understood those dynamics, and that those were the things that we had to fight for. And she understood the dynamics that led to Jim Crow, this whole idea of stopping us in our tracks as we were marching to the polls and becoming politicized and so forth. So there is, again, she brings a depth of understanding with her of the political and social conditions around the time that she lived as well.
You know, and she... juxtaposing that to the day in 1931, the Scottsboro boys were arrested. Because obviously she was dying and didn't know about this happening. But here we have these young men who were like many people in America, traveling by freight car.
Right.
These white kids jump off saying they were beaten up by black kids, and they get to the freight car, and these two white girls say they were raped by the black boys in the car. Right. So they were all arrested and taken away. And their story, I mean, it was the combination of the American Communist Party and other groups that came to their defense and fought for them.
Right.
And they were convicted and sentenced to death. And then one of them They're sentenced to death, and then even when the governor of Alabama was going to pardon them at one point, they refused to take the pardon. He took it back because they would not say they said we're innocent.
Right.
And one of them actually escaped and stayed free.
Right.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yes.
This is
right.
An incredible story about. I mean, it's again broader than just notion. Scott's Poor Boys. Who were they?
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, the relationship that and there wasn't really a cemented relationship, but the idea of the Communist Party,
sure.
And blacks beginning to look at activities of the Communist Party, even though they didn't join. The idea that. Laws were passed that said that we at least had the right to adequate legal representation.
Right.
The idea that we were talking Depression-era America and the kind of racial polarization that naturally occurs in hard economic times in a country that is where so much of the basis of what happens is race. So many, the idea that this was the worst possible time for a black man in America to be accused of defiling finer white womanhood, because that in and of itself was a lynchable act. And Ida B. Wells, again, it ties in so much to the fact that lynching didn't take place. They weren't lynched, but it was certainly something that could very well have happened, and that the culmination of her life sort of paralleled the fact that some of her struggle didn't play itself out by these guys being lynched.
Exactly. That's a really important point. Yes. That's a really important connection.
I think, too, Mark, the fact that it's as if she laid the groundwork for what would become the basis for working toward the Scottsboro Boys' freedom. I mean, even when one of the white women came back and said it didn't happen.
Right.
Okay. They still had to. And it's something else that you said too, Dr. Martin. It's interesting when you look at the relationship between the Communist Party and African Americans at the time. You know.
Yes.
And I remember asking when I talked to Ralph Ellison, because you know his book came out early, and he talked about the fact that I said, well, you know, were you a member of the Communist Party? And he said to me, no, but they were the ones who supported me when I wanted mm-hmm. to do this book. Mm-hmm. So like you were saying, we were aware of the Communist Party as a people, but it was not something that we were interested in joining.
Well, though there were a lot of African-Americans were members of the Communist Party.
Some were.
And,
yeah.
And some of the leadership of the party.
Yes.
The intellectuals.
Yeah.
Were came. And people, a lot of people went to the Communist Party and left again.
Right.
They went in because it was the one group in America that was actually fighting
right.
for human rights, but the people left for their own ideological reasons and said, I really don't want to be in here. But there was always the relationship always existed through Martin Luther King's time.
That's exactly
you know? I mean,
right.
This is the day when we're celebrating King's leading of that march in 1967, the first
right.
he led his first anti-war march that he led
right.
in Chicago, 5,000
right.
people through the streets of Chicago. I mean, there's all these connections between.
Exactly.
Well, you know, the fact that, and I go back to Attorney Leibowitz, who actually came in to represent the Scottsboro Boys. I mean, because the last thing you could do was to have a communist actually trying to win a case down south. You know, so they were smart enough to say, well, okay, Leibowitz, why don't you take the lead on this? And he did. And he was a forceful attorney for them.
So we have to take a break here. We're going to hear the our daily piece from Lisa Crawley that she does with us on Black History in Maryland. But leave us with a closing thought on this, Dr. Martin.
Well, that there were so many amazing people. I'm glad that Ida B. Wells is at the center of this discussion today. But then you can look at her relationship to W.E.B. Du Bois, her relationship to Booker T. Washington,
right.
and the whole stand and this push-pull in how the country was going to be led and how we were going to fight segregation and so forth.
As a woman, she was also one of the first women to get married in America and keep
her name.
Yes, yes,
that's
yes.
Right.
And
yeah,
she was
right.
so strong. She did have confrontations with people like Du Bois and others.
Oh yeah,
because she said Du Bois left her name off the roll of the people mm-hmm. who started the NAACP, and mm-hmm. And she always stood up and fought. She was fearless till
yes,
the day
she
drew her
yes,
last breath.
Yes,
that's right.
She was.
You know, and so Ida B. Wells is one of our great heroes, and people should know a great deal more about her and what she says to the 21st century, I think.
No question.
And the fact that she was smart enough to become a publisher, Mark. I mean, that's a very important mm-hmm. piece of it, you know, to have your own newspaper, to be a woman with your own newspaper.
And to understand the importance
in Memphis, too.
Of
right.
research.
In Memphis, right.
To understand the importance of research, having right. data to back up, particularly the lynching statistics.
Well, I want to thank you both, John Milton Wesley and Dr. Joanne Martin, who's co-founder, president, CEO of Baltimore's Great Blacks and Wax Museum. Great to have you in the studio.
Good to be
here.
Good
to have you both here.
Thank you.
We're now going to go to Lisa Crawley talking about Today in Maryland Black History.